reports that say there's that something hasn't happened are always interesting to me.
Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats. Please, no flash photography throughout our program.
The known unknowns. That is to say, we know there's some things we do not know.
Live from Las Vegas.
Ooh, Las Vegas. Hello, everybody. It's the Known Unknowns. We're a podcast about all things strange, Fortean, unknown, unsolved, and just plain weird. And what a better place for something unknown, unsolved, and just plain weird than Las Vegas, baby. My name is Peter.
Why are you shocked? Why are you shocked by the fact that we're in Vegas?
I love Vegas, man. I'm joined by Stevie.
Hello.
And he's about to tell me something that I've never heard of before.
Peter, there's a massive secret hiding in plain sight in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Is it all the hookers?
Well, no, but that's not so much a secret, Peter, as a feature.
Oh, okay. Is it all the STDs that the hookers have?
Shit, you're on to me here, Peter. No, Peter. The secret has a name, and its name is Janet.
Janet.
Yep.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of Janet before, Peter?
No.
Well, strap in. This one's right up our alley, because Janet is an airline that seemingly doesn't exist.
Okay.
Yes, Peter, we've both been to Vegas, right?
We have both been to Vegas.
We have both been to Vegas to play some cards.
Yes. Played many a card in Vegas.
Not lose hundreds of dollars.
Definitely neither of us lost several hundreds of dollars.
Yep. Well, Peter, what do you know about Las Vegas, the airport in Las Vegas?
I know that security was shockingly lax for no particular reason at all.
Peter, Las Vegas is the U.S. 7th busiest airport. And throughout the day, you'll witness planes taking off and landing. But in the very early mornings and in the late evenings, if you know where to look, you're going to see something real weird.
Ooh.
You'll see massive Boeing 737s that have no symbols on them. They're painted pure white, except for a single red line down the side of the body.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Janet plane.
Okay.
Now, Janet is not that, the actual name. It's a call sign. And do you know what a call sign is, Peter?
It's like over the radio, right? When they're like talking to each other, that's like their name.
Bingo. They're used to identify a particular plane which is talking over a radio.
Yeah.
Call signs are typically straightforward, such as American 713 or Delta 4. Some airlines, like British Airways, opt for more distinctive call signs, such as Speedbird.
Aw.
Yep. While others, like China Airlines, use Dynasty as their call sign. Then there's Janet. Then there's Janet, Peter. For a very long time, Peter, Janet has remained shrouded in mystery. It operates as an airline that isn't really an airline. Like we've said, it's a fleet of 6 planes that lack any logos or distinctive markings. So it's already a little
odd.
Peter, despite its secretive nature, Janet has been operating openly and ferrying hundreds of individuals in and out of Harry Reid International Airport in Las Vegas daily.
Daily.
But Peter, you can't buy tickets for this flight. And you most certainly cannot fly on it. Oh, do I have your curiosity yet, Peter?
I think you do, because you said somebody flies on it.
Yeah, but we don't really know for sure, Peter.
Oh, we don't know who.
In fact, Janet That's not even the real name of the airline, Peter. It doesn't have an official name. But people have thought that it might be like an acronym for things like just another non-existent terminal. Janet.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Peter, if you didn't know any better, the day-to-day activities at the Janet terminal would appear just like any other Delta flight or, you know, Spirit flight or insert other brand name here.
Right. Any other airline.
Yeah. Over,
it's all,
you know,
business
over,
as usual.
Overnight, there's only a couple of cars in the parking lot. But during the day, the parking lot is filled with hundreds of cars. People arrive dressed in civilian clothing, board the planes, and head somewhere. They spend the day wherever they are, and then return in the evening to their cars and go home.
Okay.
But that's the question, Peter. Where do these individuals go every day?
I have a guess as to what you're going to say.
This is where it gets interesting, Peter. Hold on to that guess and we'll see if you're right. No one has ever officially disclosed the destination for Janet. Mm-hmm. So to uncover the truth, some good old-fashioned sleuthing has to be done. And I love a good sleuthing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Big time.
Peter, Janet planes do indeed have airline codes and flight numbers. You know, like, which is a standard practice for flights.
Yep.
They also have transponders.
Okay.
Which is what allows, you know, radar stations to track them in the air. In fact, Peter, there are multiple websites you can just go to, and it just shows, like, every flight that's in the air.
I was just about to ask, do they show up on those websites? Okay.
Because they have transponders. But this, Peter, is where things take an interesting turn.
Okay.
When you follow a Janet flight on one of these websites, as soon as the plane reaches a point approximately 20 minutes north of Las Vegas, it mysteriously vanishes from tracking by turning off its transponder.
Okay.
And this begs the question, Peter, what is 20 minutes north of Las Vegas?
What is 20 minutes north of Las Vegas, Stephen?
The government officially calls it Homey Airport, but it also has another name, Peter, that maybe some more people know. It's also called Groom Lake, but in reality, it's none other than the infamous
Area 51. I knew it.
You got it, Peter. Woo! And that's what Janet is, Peter. It's a highly classified commuter airline owned by the Air Force, and it operates solely to covertly transport civilians, employees, contractors, and government VPs to and from some of the most secretive installations of all of America.
Right.
But there's no place it goes to more often than Area 51.
Interesting. Because I suppose, Area 51 has to be staffed by people who are...
People work there.
Yeah, like, people have to work there, and they're not living there.
Nope.
Because it's... So they've got to come from somewhere.
Exactly.
And you don't want just a mega highway... you can't just have thousands of cars driving into Area 51, so got to do something.
Peter, while it's interesting that the U.S. Oh, I skipped a paragraph here. Peter, there's a publicly available list of the current Janet fleet because it's all paperwork.
Right.
You can easily go to the FAA website and you'll discover that the owner of these planes is none other than the United States Air Force.
Okay. That makes sense.
And this is what's interesting, Peter. Is that while the Air Force owns the Janet airplanes, it doesn't directly operate the airplanes. Instead, it kind of contracts it out.
Okay.
So that kind of begs the question further, Peter. Who operates Janet Airlines?
Aliens.
No. That's later, Peter. That's later, okay. In this episode. Okay. We're going to go into a rabbit hole for this to see who actually runs this, Peter.
Is it Rasputin?
Oh, Peter, don't spoil our listeners. That's not quite yet. Peter, when Area 51 was established, employees commuted by bus or took shuttle flights from Lockheed Martin in Burbank, California.
Okay.
A few years later, Peter, Janet flights started and were transferred control of it to the defense contractor Edgerton, Gerber, Moshishin, and Greer Incorporated, otherwise now known as EG&G. A much easier thing to say. Peter, EG&G has been tied with the American, industrial complex for a long time. Mm-hmm. It even contributed to the development of the atomic bomb. Peter, they first purchased several Chinese planes before transitioning the entire fleet to Boeing 737s.
Okay.
And then relocated from Burbank, California to a terminal in Las Vegas, which was codenamed the Gold Coast. Which eventually got renamed currently, Peter, to the ACOM hangar.
Not as good of a name.
No. So who is EG&G, Peter?
I've heard of them before. EG&G? They're a mega corporation, right?
Well, Peter, they were bought. They were bought in 1999 by the Sinister Carlyle Group.
Ooh, which they sound sinister.
Come up again when we do further episodes, particularly some minor event that might have happened in the second week of September, sometime.
In a year.
Some particular year. But Carlyle Group was bought by the URS Corporation in 2002.
Okay. They had some bad press going.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. Eventually in 2014, ACOM Technology Corporation acquired the URS Corporation, which owns it today.
Okay.
Now, Peter, what does ACOM do?
It sounds like they buy corporations.
Yeah, Peter. You want to know what their self-description is?
We buy corps.
They label themselves, quote, a global network of design, engineering, construction, and management professionals that partner with clients to imagine and deliver a better world.
Okay.
End quote.
And they bought an airline.
Peter, that's kind of ominous as fuck, isn't it?
I mean, it kind of just sounds like the tagline of any engineering firm, which makes me think that's not at all what they do.
Right, exactly. Well, they make $13 billion a year.
Yeah, there's no engineering firms making $13 billion a year.
Peter, there is an ACOM job posting for a first officer co-pilot position in Las Vegas.
Okay.
The preferred qualifications for this role include experience with Boeing 737s and a background in high performance and or jet aircraft.
Okay.
Peter, the job listing doesn't specifically say that it's a Janet flight, but it does specify that the candidate must be eligible for and able to maintain a top secret government security clearance.
So it's probably for a Janet flight.
Yeah.
Seems likely.
And you need that security clearance, Peter, if you're going to fly to Area 51.
Yeah.
Oh, Peter, I think for the rest of this episode, you want to talk about Area 51 for a while?
Let's talk about Area 51.
Oh, it's freaking fascinating, Peter. Listeners, don't worry. We're going to do a full-on Area 51 episode someday. But I think today we're going to stick with the real stuff of Area 51.
The actual factual facts. Things that the government lets us know.
Well, Peter, do you know where Area 51 is?
I know that it's about 20 minutes north of the Las Vegas airport.
Because I just said that like five minutes ago.
Yep, yeah, that's the one.
But it's situated in the expansive Nevada Test and Training Range, which is comprised of smaller areas, each serving different purposes. And all these sections are designated as Area X, like Area 3, Area 9, Area...
And there's at least 51 of them.
51, yep. In close proximity to Area 51 lies... Do you know what Area Force Base is?
52.
Do you know what Air Force Base is right by Area 51, Peter?
I'm sure I've heard of it before, but I don't remember.
It's Nellis Air Force Range.
Yes.
Oh, Peter. Some of these other areas are pretty interesting, too. Like Area 5. This one spans an area of 95 square miles in
That's
the
large.
Southeastern part of the Nevada Test site, or the MTS. This area has several facilities, including the Area 5 Radioactive Waste Storage Site. The Hazardous Waste Storage Unit. And the Spill Test Facility. And between 1951 and 1962, 14 above-ground nuclear tests took place in the region, known as the Frenchman's Flat.
Okay.
Peter, notably, an actually modest 8-kiloton blast in 1951 broke all the windows in downtown Las Vegas.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot of tons.
Yeah. You hold on to your hat, Peter, because we're just getting started with the tons here.
Okay.
Area 9 played host to even more tests, with a total of 133 detonations conducted over 115 tests.
Are these like nuclear tests?
Oh, yeah, these are
okay,
all
that's
nuclear
what I
tests,
figured.
Peter.
That's what I figured.
Yep.
It takes a lot of anything else to make a kiloton of, of explosion.
Of note in Area 9, Peter, this happened on July 5th, 1957, as part of Operation Plumb Bob.
Plumb Bob.
Yep. This was the Hood Test. Have you ever heard of this one, Peter?
No, I don't think so.
This one had a staggering yield of 74 kilotons.
Jesus.
And the Hood Test stands as the largest atmospheric nuclear test ever conducted within the continental United States.
Yeah, okay.
This yield was 5 times greater than the atomic bomb dropped on Hiroshima.
That's ridiculous.
Peter, this test, they took a balloon up to like 1,200 feet in the sky and blew it up.
Mm-hmm. That's exciting, I guess.
Yeah. This whole area is just like this, Peter. Area
just
4.
Littered with radiation.
Area 4 had 44 detonations. And this is where they actually have a special facility called the Big Explosives Experimental Facility.
Oh, nice.
Otherwise known as the Beef.
Yep.
Where's the beef, Peter?
Where
it's
is
in Area
beef?
4.
It's an area. Yeah.
It's in Area
turns
4.
Out, turns out we know exactly where the beef is.
In Area 3, Peter, a total of 288 detonations occurred. And one of the notable ones here was Operation Upshot Knot Hole, which I'm sure we actually have mentioned before, Peter, as part of the nuclear testing in America, where they tried to do engineering projects with nuclear bombs. Because Project Upshot, Peter, was a series of nuclear tests conducted by the U.S. in 1953 in Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
These tests were aimed at studying the effect of nuclear detonations on equipment.
Okay. Just find out what happens to a gun when you have it inside of the blast of a nuclear warhead.
Bingo. There are other areas, Peter, of note, but, you know, what are we going to talk about all 51? Or there's more than 51, Peter.
But there's at least 51.
Yeah. But I want to talk about Area 51 next.
Okay.
Peter, throughout its history, Area 51 has gone by several names. Do you know what some of the other names for Area 51 have been?
I do not. I have only ever known it as Area 51. I know that there's like an actual, isn't there, doesn't it have like an official, like this is the like Air Force base name or like military base or whatever.
Well, we didn't even acknowledge it existed to like the 2000s, Peter.
Yeah.
But it's Groom Lake. The Groom Lake facility is one of the more official names.
Okay.
But besides that, Peter, it's known as the Watertown Strip.
Mm.
Or Dreamland.
Okay.
Or Paradise Ranch.
Okay.
Or the area.
Mm.
Or the remote location.
Mm.
Or out of town.
Nice.
At times, it's even simply called nowhere.
Okay. Those are all excellent names for a secret military base.
When you're not flying on a Janet flight, Peter, you get to Area 51 on an unmarked, dusty path.
Yep.
That leads straight to the entrance of Area 51. Its gateway is guarded by nothing more than a chain link fence and a boom gate. And several men with guns and no trespassing or you'll be shot signs.
Yes. But if you Naruto run at them, then
Peter, we're going to get to that near the end of the episode here.
They won't be able to shoot everybody at the same time.
Peter, you're spoiling all of this. Spoiler, it didn't work.
nobody got shot, so technically that part of it worked.
Peter, past this gate, there are hidden security cameras in bushes and trees and cactuses. And perched on a hilltop always sits a white pickup truck with tinted windows that keeps a watchful eye on everything below.
Mm-hmm.
Peter, some even say that there's some high-tech hidden sensors that can just detect people or anything living.
Ooh.
When it gets onto the flats.
Okay.
But that who would knows? Be
exciting. Big if true.
Big if true. Speaking about big if true, Peter, the mystery surrounding Area 51 have been around for decades.
Yeah.
Among these, I'm sure even you have heard, Peter, theories about aliens. And that theory, it's going to get its own episode, Peter.
Oh, yeah.
Don't worry about that, listeners.
And that goes, like, all the way back, that.
Oh, yeah. Technically, we're going to have to start that episode, like, 100,000 years before humans existed.
Well, technically, yes.
But do you want to know where the real origins of Area 51 come from, Peter?
Do I? I think I do. Yeah, let's get into it.
It comes from U2.
YouTube?
Not U2. U2. Oh,
the band?
Not the band. The airplane.
Oh.
Following World War II, the Soviet Union closed itself off behind the Iron Curtain.
Yes, it did.
And a literal and figurative shroud of secrecy descended upon everything behind the Iron Curtain.
Yes.
And when the Soviet Union threw its support behind North Korea in 1950, Peter, it became quite evident that the Kremlin was poised to expand its sphere of influence.
Mm-hmm.
And this freaked the fuck out, Peter, the people in the U.S.
Yeah, everyone kind of panicked a little bit.
Because we didn't know anything.
Right.
Well, that was going on in there, Peter.
We had no clue.
And remember, this was a mere decade after Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
So we had surprise attack on our mind.
Mm-hmm.
And not to mention,
it was only a few years after the end of World War II. So, like,
there
was probably some PTSD going on for almost everybody in America.
And, Peter, there was no military force like the Red Army at the end of World War II.
No, they were infamous.
We had the Strategic Air Command, our Air Force, but our army was nothing compared to the Red Army that marched across Russia into Europe.
Right. Just between sheer numbers, tenacity, the willingness experience to just throw soldiers at something until it
technically
worked.
It was the Red Army that beat the Nazis.
Right.
I mean, sure, our supplies helped, our bombing runs and everything.
But
it was, yeah.
We had our hands full with the Japanese.
We're not experts here, so don't confuse our ignorance with facts. But, I'm not a historian.
Not a historian. Hashtag, nah, we don't know anything.
Yeah, but Peter, the Air Force faced a problem with conducting reconnaissance missions over the Soviet Union using low-flying aircraft. You know what that problem was, Peter?
They get shot.
They got shot down.
Bullets.
Yep.
Okay.
So in November 1954, President Dwight D. Eisenhower
good old Ike.
Granted approval for the development of a high-altitude reconnaissance aircraft program known as the U-2.
Okay.
And this primary objective was to locate a secluded and undisclosed site for training and testing. And this led them to Nevada.
Yeah, the middle of nowhere.
Almost nothing at this point in time.
It's a desert.
It led them to a place, a salt flat known as Groom Lake, which served as a World War II gunnery range for the Army Air Corps.
Okay.
Before the Air Force existed.
Yep.
And on maps, allegedly, okay, because we don't know any facts of anything about this, Peter. Allegedly, on maps, this was designated Area 51.
Okay.
And so it was transformed into a new, highly classified military installation. And, Peter, because Groom Lake, this all was all kind of ominous and, secretive sounding.
Yep.
One of the principal engineers behind the U-2 project, in order to attract other engineers to actually come join the project, called the area Paradise Ranch.
Oh, to try to get people to come out there to the middle of the
desert.
Don't
come work in the Nevada desert. Come work at Paradise Ranch.
Yeah. It's fun here.
Yeah. It's paradise.
A lake. Did they spell it like pair a dice? Like two that's dice?
Funny. That's good. No, it was paradise. So the U-2 testing began in July of 1955. And Peter, oh man, do you know what started pouring in and started happening in 1955?
Aliens.
UFO sightings.
The UFOs.
Yep. And a lot of these UFO sightings were made by airline pilots, Peter.
Ooh, okay.
Who had never before witnessed an aircraft flying at such extreme altitudes. Because, Peter, during the 1950s, the highest attainable altitudes for military aircraft were ranging from 10,000 to 20,000 feet.
Okay.
And the highest ever reached was 40,000 feet, Peter. So when the U-2s began, flying at 60,000 feet, it appeared actually alien.
People got a little wigged out.
Because these were, people that flew in the world wars and were knowledgeable pilots, because that's who flew planes back then.
Right. They were like, that's impossible. Nothing can be that high.
Exactly. So, Peter, eventually U-2 operations ceased as the 60s drew closer. Area 51 still remained a hub for the testing of other classified airplanes.
Okay.
And there, other cutting-edge aircraft were, trained on, including the A-12 and such other aircraft such as the Bird of Prey, the F-117, and the Northrop Tactic Blue, all, bleeding-edge stuff.
Yeah.
Recently, Peter, some declassified documents have come out that shed light on something called Project Have Donuts.
Ooh, I like the sound of this project.
Me too.
I could work for this one.
Peter, have you ever heard of this before?
No, but I wish I had.
Well, Project Have Donuts occurred in the 70s. And what it was is that we flew a bunch of captured Soviet MiG aircrafts.
Okay.
And pitted them in practice exercises against our airplanes.
Oh, so it had nothing to do with donuts.
It had nothing to do with donuts. This is what...
All right. Well, I'm back out.
This is what aerospace historian and author Peter Merlin said, who'd been researching this for three decades. They flew from Area 51 and pitted our own fighters against the MiGs to develop tactics. They learned that you can't outturn them, but you can outrun them.
Ooh, okay.
And it's still going today.
Good to know.
But instead of seeing MiG-17s and 21s, there's MiG-29s and Su-27s. End quote.
Okay.
Peter, do you want to know what kind of airplanes the Russian Federation is fighting with now in Ukraine?
Are they the MiG whatevers?
Yeah, they're the Su-27s.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, Peter, and these, this is still going on in this part of Nevada, Peter. As recently as September 2017, an Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Eric Schultz died in a plane crash under mysterious circumstances in Nevada.
Mm.
And, Peter, they refused to say what type of plane he was flying.
Mm.
And there's some belief in, you know, the community that he was flying some either reverse engineered or captured Russian planes.
Okay.
Against some of our current model aircraft.
Right.
But we will never know.
No.
Yep.
Probably not.
Oh, Peter.
Maybe in 100 years they'll.
Maybe. Maybe once everybody's dead.
Yeah.
Yep.
Once we're all dead.
Peter, those were some real quote unquote facts.
Yeah.
About Area 51. Mm-hmm. Despite all those real facts, the alien conspiracy theories gained significant traction in 1989.
Yeah.
Primarily due to the claims made by Bob Lazar.
Love that guy.
You know this guy, Peter?
Oh, yeah. Well, not personally, but... Well,
obviously. Have you ever, like, listened to his stuff?
A little bit. It's...
Yeah.
Exhilarating.
Peter, Bob Lazar went on a Las Vegas local news radio show hosted by George Norrie. And who... I love George Norrie.
Excellent human being.
Lazar...
And by another, I mean... The excellent human being so far in this story.
Lazar asserted that he had not only witnessed extraterrestrial beings, but also had a role in the reverse engineering of alien spacecraft during his employment at the Area 51 base.
How thrilling.
Oh, Peter and Bob Lazar.
What a good story.
He's going to get the star. He's going to be the star of his own episode. Like, he'll be worth it, just like that George Adamski episode we did a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
So we'll get into the real stuff that really happened at Area 51 when we talk about him.
Okay.
But it's not just Bob either, Peter. In 1996, a documentary titled Dreamland, directed by Bob Burgess, featured an interview with a 71-year-old mechanical engineer who claimed to be an Area 51 employee from the 50s.
Okay.
This individual claimed this individual made a series of claims, including his involvement in the development of a flying disc. He contended, was based on a disc originating from a crashed experimental craft and was employed in pilot training.
Okay.
Oh, what do you think of that?
I mean, big if true.
In 2000,
I feel like I'm going to be saying that a lot.
That's like your catchphrase, Peter. In 2004, a person using the pseudonym Dan Berchtesgaden, also known as Dan Crane, made the assertion that he had been engaged in cloning alien viruses.
Wow.
While stationed at Area 51.
Okay.
While working alongside a gray alien.
Ooh.
That he called J-Rod.
Oh, okay. That's a good name for an alien.
Yep. Yeah, we'll come back to that in the future, Peter.
Okay.
And you know who else is in this story? Someone Minnesotan here, Peter.
Prince?
No, Peter. Prince never held an elected office in Minnesota.
Oh.
Would you say that he's got the body for this?
I'd say he does.
Oh, man.
Oh, the governor.
Jesse Ventura is in this story, too.
My favorite politician of all time.
Jesse Ventura conducted an independent investigation in Area 51. Into
Area 51, boy.
Because of course he did.
Yeah.
During which he's
the body.
Yeah, he's the body. He interviewed former employees and aeronautical engineers associated with the facility.
Mm-hmm.
And Ventura's interviews included insights from one Michael Schratt, who claimed to be an aeronautical engineer in Area 51.
Okay.
And he maintained that there were no aliens on the base.
Well, of course he did.
According to Schratt, Area 51 houses a variety of experimental technologies that are significantly more advanced than currently in use, with some innovations at least 50 years ahead of their time. This is what he said, Peter.
Okay.
Things you saw in Star Wars and Star Trek, we've been there, done that, and either put it to use or realized it's not worth the effort.
Okay.
What do you think of that, Peter?
Well, it sounds to me like what's even the point of doing science anymore if we've already done all that?
Yeah, I 100% believe that what the government has is a number of years ahead of what we can get.
Oh, I'm sure.
I don't know if it's 50 years ahead
of what we can get. Like every big breakthrough in science is government funded.
Yeah.
Because that's who has the money.
Look back on, we listened to our DARPA episode. This is that shit that they're talking about.
Yeah.
Is DARPA 50 years ahead of everyone? I don't think so, but it's not ahead of us.
Right.
Well, Peter, you mentioned this earlier in the episode. What are some other things that happened to Area 51?
Well, recently? They got assaulted is maybe not quite the right word,
but in July
a bunch of nerds showed up.
Yeah, in July of 2019, an anonymous Facebook post that started as a joke proposed...
Allegedly
started as a joke. Peter, 2 million people responded to this event. This event was a proposed storming of Area 51.
Because they, quote, can't stop all of us. Many of you will remember this.
Because it only happened back in September 20th of 2019, before all of the bad times.
It was before called, all the bad... Is this where the bad times came from?
In response to this, did they cause the bad times?
Oh.
It was, like Peter mentioned, it was called Storm Area 51. They can't stop all of us. With the aim of, quote, literally, quote, seeing them aliens, end quote.
Yep.
Peter, did you ever respond to this?
Oh, I did. Yeah, absolutely. 100%. There was a period of time where I fully intended to be a part of this. I actually looked into purchasing plane tickets to go down there.
Well, Peter, the United States Air Force was a bit concerned by the 2 million people saying they'd be there. So they issued a discouraging statement advising against any attempts to enter the area where American armed forces were training.
Yeah, that when they posted that was when I realized that I believe what actually changed my mind. So I saw that, right?
Sure.
And then a good friend of ours and listener of the show just texted me a picture of, I don't know anything about military tanks, but some sort of tank just shooting like rockets at targets and blowing them up and going, I'm pretty sure they can stop all of us. And I went, yeah, no, I think you're right.
Well, Peter, this didn't stop some people. I mean, people
did show up.
People, I'm not even to that part yet. People love a party. So in response to the 2 million people that responded to this, Peter. They held a music festival there called Alien Stock and Storm Area 51 Base Camp.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. This, of course, was aimed to capitalize on the popularity of all of this.
Peter. Oh, yeah.
It offered music, entertainment, and more than 3,000 people showed up, Peter.
Yep.
To this music festival. And about 150 individuals decided to go forward with this. And they were repulsed by the guards, Peter. Mostly harmlessly.
I feel like more or less the guards were probably repulsed by them first.
Yeah. But, Peter, two people were indeed arrested.
Oh.
Attempting to enter the base here.
Okay. They thought that they could get past all of the security measures.
Yeah.
Just the two of them.
Peter, that's kind of a fun story about Area 51.
It is. It is a fun story.
Peter, do you want a much less fun story about what happens when you actually try to storm Area 51?
Uh-oh.
Peter, the following January, an incident occurred where an unidentified man attempted to breach the security checkpoint of Area 51. Mm-hmm. The man drove through the checkpoint and started a high-speed car chase for 8 miles while base security was in pursuit.
Yeah.
Eventually, the man stopped, exited his vehicle, carrying a, quote, cylindrical object.
Yeah.
And despite requests to halt and comply with the officers, Peter, he did not put the object down.
No.
And can you guess what immediately happened next?
Bullets.
Yeah, Peter. The Nevada National Security Site security officers, the NNSS, discharged their weapons and shot the man to death.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Well, that's Area 51, Peter. Well, we don't know anything really about Area 51, but what we do know, Peter,
is they can real, stop all of us.
They can stop us. What we do know, for real, Peter, is that on average, approximately 1,000 people per day take Janet flights from Las Vegas to Area 51 and then come back. Peter, is it conceivable that these individuals are using a covert airline to engage in work related to extraterrestrial spacecraft? Do you think they could be actually doing that?
It could be.
I mean, hell yeah.
It's definitely conceivable.
I think they might be. But, you know, we don't know. But with each passing year, we get closer and closer to true disclosure.
We're getting there. Slowly and but surely.
Janet Airlines will always be there to get people to work.
Gotta get people to work. People gotta work.
Well, what do you think about this story, Peter? I guess I never really thought about how thousands of people get to work.
I mean, it makes 51. Sense. This is honestly by far the closest to just a fact-based podcast episode we've had.
I think so, for a while at least. Well, everyone, I hope you enjoyed yourself. I almost wanted to talk about another airport during this, but
I think I know what airport you're talking about.
I think the Denver airport deserves its own episode. I tried to start to work it into here, but that would have been another 45 minutes.
There's too much.
And there's a lot of stuff there, Peter.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. A lot to talk about.
So we'll come back to DIA in another episode. But for now, if you look to the sky, if you live in Las Vegas, watch for that white aircraft with a red stripe. Yep. Maybe you'll see one someday.
It's probably going to Area 51.
If you've ever seen one or taken a picture of it,
Don't tell anybody.
But you can send it to us.
Yeah.
At contactthenownunknowns@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a Discord.
Yes, we do.
with the in the episode link right below here, right here.
Come hang out.
Ding ding. And we have a subreddit r/theknownunknowns.
Yeah, we do.
We have a Patreon.
Yep.
If you like us, throw us a couple of dollars. You get access to our library of bonus episodes.
Yeah, we do our best to upload every month. Semi-regularly to yep. bonus episodes up there.
Indeed. I think that's about everything. Do you have anything you want to blow up
yeah.
at the end of this episode, Peter?
As always, check out my band if you haven't. We're called The Rangers. We have an album called Roll the Dice. We will be playing at the Brower House in Lombard, Illinois on December 30th, opening up for a gentleman by the name of Billy Gray.
Billy Gray?
The Billy Gray.
Oh my gosh.
Is he famous?
I don't know who that is.
he's a good dude. But yeah, we playing some good old-fashioned honky-tonk country music.
I'm assuming you're on Spotify.
We are on Spotify Apple album. Music, all that good stuff. Yeah. Anywhere where you're listening to this podcast, you can find our music. Well,
fantastic. I don't have anything to prompt, but come back next week. I'll have another fun story for you.
Cannot wait.
I say a fun story, but might not be so much fun.
50-50. You never know what.
Might be full of blood. Blood can be fun. Maybe there might be a bird in the story, but
birds can be fun.
Birds can be very evil, Peter.
Can they now?
But you'll have to wait to see.
Okay. I have some stories about evil birds that I could share.
Well, put a pin in that for our evil bird episode, Peter. Bye, everybody.
Well, with that wonderful teaser, we'll see y'all next week.
I gotta go catch my Janet flight. See you, everybody.
Bye now.
6, 5, 4.